fallout from The Desert Storm by Blue Sunshine, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of George Lucas. Chapter 3. The duel with Master Tal lasts half an hour, and it's beautiful. Master Tal, being Nurian, is of a height with Qui-Gon Jinn, and like Master Jinn, she is a practitioner of unexpected Ataru, which favors smaller combatants as it demands much with its high aerials and leaps. Master Nasadeh meets her with an implacable Suresu defense, swirling around her aggressive attacks with precise and graceful economy. As a style, Suresu gave up much in the way of opportunities for defense and often waited for the opponent to wear themselves out. Master Tal, however, was renowned for always having another reserve of energy to call upon, seemingly indefatigable. So Master Nasadeh is not, in fact, waiting for her to wear herself out. He waits instead for her to expect his defense, waits for her to study him and plan accordingly, her blows hitting truer, her strikes closer to the mark, and then, when she is sure of the pace of combat, he shifts abruptly from Suresu to an equally aggressive Ataru. Her rhythm falters, and she struggles to catch back up as he dances around her own shaky defense. He leaps where she expects him to dodge, and dives in when she expects him to block, and he catches her in a turn, scoring a training strength sear across the back and letting his blade hover, humming dangerously under her ear, waiting for a swift side shot that could end her life. The match is called. The audience murmurs, credits exchanging hands and assessments being passed from person to person. Did you see how he moved there? Did you see where she faltered there? Bant hugs Obi-Wan's arm sorrowfully. Master Tal will try again, she promises. Obi-Wan sighs. Tal and Nasadeh bow to each other, and the Nurian eyes him with a wary respect before striding off to be checked over by a Padawan healer. The seer is more irritating than painful to a full Jedi Knight and Master, but she is given a salve and sent back to the audience. It is Knight Adi Gallia's turn. Adi is well aware that her reputation is that of diplomat, but reputations can be misleading. She is not a consular Jedi, but a sentinel, and her fighting prowess has never suffered in favor of her duties as a liaison between the Order and the Senate. What most do not know is that she is a master of Jem So, a powerfully aggressive combat form. Master Nasadeh, she knows, is also a practitioner of Jem So, and she grimly recognizes from the display she just saw that he may well be a master of several forms. Only his Padawan might claim to know, as when they practiced, they generally did so in a private cell, given the general displeasure of most Jedi towards Nasadeh's teaching methods. She had hoped Tal might be able to engage him for longer, wearing him down for Adi's assault, so that the young knight might prove able to simply overwhelm the other master, but such was luck. Nasadeh's red-gold hair shades his face, and it never fails to strike her that his eyes are so much older than the rest of him, a burning blue-green with a hint of gray. He is handsome, most will admit, and carries the regal bearing most knights could only dream of achieving, and yet his pleasant face and his aura of respect hide a man she finds distastefully arrogant, always looking out at his fellow Jedi as if he knows all their secrets and finds them wanting, as if he has the right to judge. At his Padawan, a boy who works so hard and fears failure so greatly that he won't utter a word against the master who claimed him on the eve of his reassignment, and he feels greatly that he takes advantage of the boy's desperation to be a Jedi Knight, and that in the end, he'll ruin a promising student with his unyielding demands. There is a shadow around him, the Force always whispering in his wake, none of it intelligible, and it sets Adi's teeth on edge. Her senses prickle of warning in his presence, and she is not blind to how the Council watches him. Most of the Masters whisper that he was a shadow, and she does not doubt it. And they whisper more that he was a shadow who slipped too deep into the dark. And she does not doubt that either. Shadows faced the worst of the galaxy. They did what no one else could do. And they often lost more than anyone could bear, including themselves. She respects the sacrifice and the service of any shadow, but she will not allow that respect to cloud her judgment as to the reprehensibility of his behavior. Addie sets her stance, blade held braced near her side, a level line straight out from her grip, and steels herself. He studies her for a moment, and slides into a form she cannot quite recognize. The audience whispers, then quiets. Addie takes the first step, and feels her balance slide before she grounds herself in the force, and his stance becomes clear. He has stepped into Niman, the sixth form, one practiced by diplomats more than anyone else. It had no great advantages, Niman, but no true weaknesses either. A blending of the first five styles together, coupled with maneuvers and attacks purely of the force. She had not expected it, as their blades meet and she presses and he disappears. And she whirls to block and then presses him again. She had expected him to display Soresu or meet her with Jemso. Impenetrable defense or meeting aggressive offense with aggressive offense. Niman was difficult to work around. For those who were not familiar with it, as it was a mercurial form, and relied more on ingenuity of use than on the follow-through of practiced katas. It was, ironically, the form most expected her to practice. And that was precisely the reason why she had not chosen it as a mastery. She had a compact stature, and utilizing Jemso gave her an element of surprise. She slams forward into his blade, ducks, and slams in again, only to find herself being yanked forward, overbalancing and sending her tumbling. She rolls, leaping back to her feet, and parries a blow that makes her stagger when it comes and abruptly disappears without follow-through. She chases him, and he dodges. He strikes, and she blocks and chases again, only for him to meet her straight on and slam into her not only with his own weight, but with the force. And she hits the ground again and rolls again. She comes up only to her knees and lashes out, sweeping at his legs. He jumps and comes back down on her like an avalanche falling, and Addie rolls out of the way and pops back up to her feet as his saber strikes the ground with a hiss. She dives for his back, only for him to go low and sweep at her legs. Instead of jumping, she leaps forward, colliding bodily with him, which apparently does catch him by surprise. They both hit the ground with a hard oomph, and he wheezes before she can feel his force grip cradle her body and then fling her across the sal. She lands on her toes with a slide and pauses, breathing heavy. They study each other across the distance, and he offers her a chagrined smile, tipping his head in respect for the unexpected tactic. Addie glowers back at him. "Holy Sith," Quinlan murmurs, while Bat just gapes, squeezing Obi-Wan's hand. "This is so stupid," the girl in front of them murmurs, and then turns around to glare at Obi-Wan. "If you would just actually speak up for yourself, they wouldn't be making such a show of this. It's a bad example for all Padawans, and prospective Padawans." She's a human initiate, still in white and cream robes with loose blonde hair and pale crystal blue eyes. And her arms are crossed and her jaw set, screaming stubbornness. "I don't need to speak up for myself," Obi-Wan retorts. "My master and I are fine." "Then you're delusional," she snorts. "Because the way he treats you is not fine. No other Padawan is so roughly handled. And if he's allowed to keep pushing you well beyond your limits, it sends the message that that is okay. And it isn't. It makes for poor learning and poor teaching. And that," she eyes Obi-Wan up and down, "makes for poor Jedi," she says scathingly. "Siri Tachi," a fellow initiate hisses, eyes wide with shock at her behavior while she continues to glare at Obi-Wan. "I wasn't aware that you and I were well enough acquainted that you could judge my worth as a Jedi." "Initiate Tachi," Obi-Wan replies coldly. "Or are we all to be judged by the value of rumors?" She falters slightly, "because they may be only a year or so apart in age, but no, they didn't know each other." "Everyone says..." "Everyone, really?" Obi-Wan cuts her off. "Master Yoda says I'm mistreated." "No," she says mulishly and glares at Bat. "But your best friend does, and her master does." Obi-Wan sighs and turns a flat look on Bant. "Have I ever actually complained about my master?"
"No," Bant stutters. "But Obi, I know how much being a Jedi means to you. He could beat you and you wouldn't say anything. He did destroy your shields.
Because he was trying to get out a message to stop a massacre," Obi-Wan retorts angrily. "And my master does not beat me," he adds, glaring at everyone shamelessly listening in. "He never asks of me anything I can't do."
"But does he ask you to do things you shouldn't have to do?" Siri counters.
"Because I don't have to ask anyone about anything when we can see you falling asleep on your dinner tray,
or every time you mess up the easiest of questions in class or breaking down in tears in the hallway.
Was that you? Obi-Wan snaps. You had no right. Your master made you cry. He did not. I saw it. You were wincing just to walk, and then he said something to you, and you just started crying.
And then you run off to tell the entire Cawking Temple. Obi-Wan glares at her, fists clenched.
Bant flinches, and Quinlan, being Quinlan, pretends the entire conversation isn't happening right next to him, and instead shoots pointed looks at eavesdroppers.
Which means you didn't see my master helping me back to our quarters or sitting with me till I calmed down, or going to get us dinner where someone rudely forced him to issue a challenge. And I was only upset because I'm so cripping sick of having nightmares. How about you sit at a table with baby-eating psychopaths and then try to stop a bloodbath all the while you know your master is in danger and have your shields wrecked on a planet just screaming with darkness and death and hate and despair and see how long you can hold it together?
Ciri sucks in a sharp breath and then just stares at him. Fine blonde brows still angrily drawn together. Fine, I'm sorry, she says. Obi-Wan lets out a huge whoosh of air, still pent up to argue.
What?
I'm sorry, she says sullenly. I didn't know.
You didn't ask, Obi-Wan snaps. No one has actually even asked.
You actually like the way your master treats you?
She lifts a brow, voice incredulous.
No? Obi-Wan scoffs. It's demanding and exhausting and it sucks, but it's making me better and I do like my master. I don't want a different one.
Ciri peers at him critically and then shakes her head.
You're nuts, she mutters.
And you're nosy,
Obi-Wan shoots back. She gives him a pinched look and then a lopsided smile holding out her hand. Obi-Wan shakes it with a half-smile of his own.
Nice to meet you.
Bant frowns at them both.
Humans make no sense.
Hey, don't judge the whole species by their example, Quinlan protests. That's bias.
Quinlan, you're not human,
Bant rolls her eyes. But I look human, he points out. There was a loud, grinding snap, and everyone's attention whips back to the arena, where Adigalia is looking at her lightsaber with betrayal as it sparks and smokes, the blade dying. She takes one even breath, tosses it aside, and bares her teeth at Master Nasadeh, who disengages his copper blade with a rolling shrug. He tosses his own lightsaber to his Padawan, who has to stretch to catch it. The beings around Obi-Wan crowd in, eager to get a good look at it, while the rest of the audience leans in expectantly as the match progresses to pure hand-to-hand combat. Even without lightsabers, Nasadeh and Galia are well matched, the knight being only a few inches shorter, and her species being slightly denser than your average human. She lands a kick right over the healing wound on his chest that has several healers jumping to their feet as Nasadeh wheezes, but when she lunges in for the advantage, he flips her and slams her down into the ground. She gasps out a groan and kicks at his knees only for him to catch her foot and flip her over. She uses the force to enhance the motion and tears herself out of his grip, rolling over her shoulder and back up to her feet. They face each other again, both grimly determined. Adigalia does not win in the end, but she counts the black eye Master Nasadeh sports for the next several days as its own victory.